Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Drogba, onside Anelka, and Lampard! And it may well be that Frank Lampard has just scored the goal that ultimately will clinch the league title for Chelsea.
And they know, look at that reaction from them, they know how important that is, they know what a message that sends out.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Lob Podcast with These Football Times. My name is Stuart Horsfield and I'm delighted to say that after a little hiatus, we are back in the centre circle. Once again, we have a guest author with us who is going to talk us through their book, which I think is pretty unique. A pretty unique story, and as the conversation goes over the next hour, I think you'll agree that it's a story that's been worth telling, and certainly a book that's been worth writing. But before we get to tonight's guest, I would just like to introduce two co-hosts for tonight. First of all, Mr. Stephen Scragg. Stephen, how are you, sir?
Oh, all very well. All good, Stu. How's it going your end?
I would imagine it's like everybody else is in the country. I ring my mum every day to see how she is, and it's probably the most monotonous phone call of my life.
Because there's absolutely nothing that anyone's done.
No, and nothing.
I've been inside for a bit, Stu. I know the record that's been kind of like trotted out there. Been away for a bit. We've all been away for a bit, yeah.
Yeah, it's all I get from my mum is updates on the garden, updates on the neighbours' gardens, and then a round of questions as to how everyone's doing in my house, and that's about as good as it gets.
And then that's it. There's not much else you can add at the minute, Jim.
No, unfortunately not.
No, you can't.
And obviously, Mr. Gary Thacker from Spain. Gary, how's your life at the moment?
Very much the same. I mean, we're into the week of lockdown now. And I guess, you know, when you get to this sort of getting through things, and one thing it does do, to concentrate the mind for writing, so, belting through the writing tasks as we go along. But generally, you know, as you say, when you have conversations, you know, we speak to the kids on FaceTime back in the UK, and the wife brings their parents up those days, and what you been doing? Well, and that's about it, really. But I'm pretty good, mate. I'm pretty good. I'm looking forward to it tonight. It's great to be back on in the centre circle again, and we've got a fascinating book to talk about tonight as well.
It is, yeah. It's absolutely. Like I say, I think it's a great story, and hopefully one that will sort of pique the listeners' interest, if you like. And then, you know, like we say, reading seems to be the new cool thing to do at the moment. You know, and hopefully, like you say, it'll convince a few people to sort of get the book and sort of read the story in depth. I mean, we're going to have about an hour, and luckily we have the author, but, you know, if you can go out and buy the book, I'm sure they'll find things either that we don't have time to chat about or things that we might miss. But anyway, so enough about us and what we've not been doing and my mum's garden. tonight's author, tonight's guest, tonight's book. I guess living the football dream, we've probably all fantasised of, you know, gate crashing the game we love. And tonight's guest has done just that. I'm so envious. From football fan to club scout via a spectacular multiple prize winning association with fantasy football. Latest guest in the centre circle is it is extraordinary. Rui Marquez, author of the brilliant book, The Unknown Champion. Rui, welcome to the podcast.
It's a pleasure for me. Thank you for inviting.
Absolutely, like I say, the story is, you know, the story is wonderful. The book is wonderful, and I think it's certainly a story that I've I've never come across before, and I think as I sort of said there in the introduction, I think it's everybody's dream, and certainly anybody who plays fantasy football. I think when you start a season playing fantasy football, it's somebody that everybody believes they could then go on and do and work within the game. But you're the guy who's actually made it work. So I suppose to start us off then, if you wouldn't mind, a little bit about yourself and then a little bit about the book and why you decided to write your story.
Okay. So first of all, thanks for your compliments and for your nice words. My name is Rui Marques. I'm 40 years old My life project when I was a teenager was to have an economics degree and have a career in finance. I always had the passion about football. I always tried to spend my free time in something related with football. And in my early 20s, fantasy football came across in my life. I live in Portugal, I'm Portuguese, and in Portugal the market of fantasy football was much more limited than in England. But when José Mourinho signed for Chelsea in 2004, me and some friends, we started to look to England as a fantasy football option, and we started to play at the time a Daily Mirror game. I think any of us had success in first year, but in the second year, speaking for myself, I started to see that I could have a chance, to win prizes and that, or at least to fight for win. So I became, completely addicted to England Premier League because of Mourinho, because some Cristiano Ronaldo was already at Man United. My life changed when I started to win fantasy football competitions. After I won in England and later in Germany, I decided to send my story and send my CVs to real clubs, to real professional clubs, first in Portugal, then in other countries. And I got my first season as a scout just in 2013. So after I won, 2013 was really the year that changed my life. And after my fifth season as a scout, I decided that I had an enough interesting story to write a book. So, I'm trying to summarize, all my story in a couple of minutes. But I decided to write a book, an ordinary guy that just wanted to be like, have a career, as grabbed an opportunity to build a career as a scout in the real football industry. So I think my book tells a story that is quite unique, and my goal of writing the book is to also to become an inspiration to the million of persons that play fantasy football worldwide. And now in the present, and it's almost one year after I finished to write the book. I'm finishing my seventh season as a scout, and I currently work to a Polish club, and I also spend three and a half seasons for an American club. I'm building a career. Unfortunately, we are living now this bad situation of this virus, but it's my seventh season in a row working for professional clubs, which I think it's quite good. And I tried to express my, you know, all my experiences along this journey from fantasy football to the real industry world in my book. So I think the book is, you know, it's a good product and a good interesting story. That's my summary.
it's absolutely fascinating, and I'm going to come to the two guys in a second just for their initial thoughts. But I play fantasy football every year, and every year I like to think that every year will be different, or every season will be different, or every season I'll give it the time and attention that it deserves, and blah blah blah. But I'm absolutely fascinated about the attention to detail. Certainly, I feel like your story comes in two halves. So there's the fantasy football half of your story, and then there's your sort of career in the professional game that came courtesy of your success in fantasy football. But first of all, Gary, just initial thoughts really on Rui and his incredible, well, story, I guess.
I get, it's one of these things that, you know, if Rue wasn't here talking to us, if we hadn't read the book and somebody just said, I know this guy who used to play fantasy football, did well, and then got a job scouting for professional clubs, I think you'd say, come on, that's never going to happen. But, you know, Rue is sort of, you know, obviously bucked the trend, but sort of almost traveled the dream route of anybody, you know, anybody who was fascinated with football and, you know, perhaps, you know, wasn't good enough to play. One question about fantasy football. I mean, I do fantasy football as well, and you know, I've had done for many, many years. And you mentioned about the dedication. I just want to ask Rui one question. You know, because when you first started doing it, Rui, you mentioned about Mourinho. I'm a Chelsea fan, by the way, so thank you for Jose. Much appreciated. When you started doing the fantasy football, and when you started to become, you know, exceptionally good at it, were you ever irritated? Did any of your mates beat you?
To be honest, we had like, you know, maybe 10, 12 Portuguese. I don't know if I understand the question. Any of my mates
forgive me, when you first started, because I mean, the people I play fantasy football with in the leagues, yeah. I mean, I tend not to worry too much about the national league, just that I'm white, not that sort of standard. But I'm in sort of local leagues with friends or people I used to work with, six or seven leagues like that. So for somebody who, you know, became, you know, the ultimate champion at these sort of things, were you sort of really irritated in the early days when friends...
Okay, I understand the question. Yeah, you know, in Portugal, the first time I played fantasy football was in Portugal. In Portugal, there's not the... At the time, we're speaking about almost 20 years ago, there was not the, you know, the organization of mini-leagues of friends like it was in... Well, like there is in England. But I remember in 2004, we started, you know, some mini-leagues within the Portuguese guys, you know, like the Portuguese guys that were playing in England. To be honest, I think I didn't have much success in my first season. I think I remember trying different things, you know, but it wouldn't result. I don't know if you remember Andy Johnson, a player from Crystal Palace. It was a season that it was exceptional good, you know, for Crystal Palace. And I remember starting badly that season, and all of my Portuguese mates had Andy Johnson, and I decided I have to catch up, and without Andy Johnson, and it didn't result, you know. So Andy Johnson kept on scoring all the season, you know. And so my first season in England was not good, because I was a bit stubborn about Andy Johnson.
Good lad. Sometimes you have to stick to your guns, really, and I suppose I'm sort of a little bit grateful that you got better. I wasn't in your league, because you would have killed everybody in there, mate.
I remember when a colleague of mine saying, we in the first season, it was like the joke, you know, this team. But then suddenly he became, you know, the number one. And all of my Portuguese colleagues, you know, none of them, you know, won anything.
Yeah.
You are right, Gary. It does get incredibly competitive, especially if you're in a mini league with family members or anything. If you win your family league, that's it. You're quite happy with however you get on for the rest of the season.
Yeah, you say that, Stu. I mean, I'm in a league of two with my son, and last season he beat me. For the first time in three or four seasons, and this season is about 50 points clear. But if the Saints gets cancelled, I'm calling it the void.
There's always a silver lining to these problems in the world, isn't there? Stephen, fantasy football for you, is it something you take part in? Is it something you can buy into?
I've not done it for a couple of years now, but it's something I used to do. Yeah, and the allure of it was certainly in the early days was something that was it was something very, very different. I suppose it was kind of like a grown-up version of doing some UTO or anything like that. That kind of like fascination of being so in love with football to be able to have some kind of reach out and touch version of it, you know, whether you're, you know, a child or a grown-up, you know, it's absolutely massive to have some kind of hands-on version of football that you can take part in. I loved it at one point. I wasn't very good at it by any means, you know, of the imagination, and you know, even like little interdepartmental competitions that we had and stuff like that, never came close to winning anything. I used to take the hump over it. Yeah, I took it to me personally at one point because I always pride myself on being this pattern analyst. So I thought I should be really good at this, and then I wasn't. So I think I ended up going into retirement.
Whenever I play it, my entire budget is blown on a front three and a midfield three, and then my back four and goalkeeper, I'm left with whatever the bare minimum happens to be. It's such a front loaded team of entertainers that are never going to win me anything. But on paper, it looks like the greatest team in the world. But that's just the tactic I use, and hence why I'm not in even Rui's position. I'm probably not even in Gary's position.
We all need to take a lesson from Rui's book. And if anybody's interested in fantasy football, read Rui's book, because this guy knows how to win a fantasy football.
Yeah, my book, you know, the purpose of my book is not like teaching lessons about fantasy football, but I have a specific chapter, just dedicated to that, you know. Along the book, you can see, you know, my story, my options, what I, you know, my the players that I used to select most. But there is a specific chapter when I, you know, I'm more deep, I go deeper about it. And for example, one of the things is that if the game is well organized, which namely usually in England it happens, the Sun, Mirror, Telegraph, you have to build a team with, you know, balanced structure, you know. We can't spend the money just on, you know. At the time, I remember Shearer, Van Nistelrooy, and Henry, for example. If you put have that three guys, you know, you will not have a chance, you know, to win.
That'd be me. That's exactly what I would have done.
Some of my mistakes in the beginning was a bit like that, yeah. And balance the team, yeah.
The thing that fascinates me in the book, Rui, and, you know, I suppose we'll almost sort of start at the beginning, and that's I think this is probably where my problem lies as well, is the absolute dedication that it takes. I know in your chat, you know, you talk about pre-season being the single most crucial part of, you know, going into a fantasy league competition, that pre-season is crucial, and, you know, that August is a really important part. Pre-season bores me. There's no wonder I don't do very well, because pre-season, I have no interest in pre-season friendlies in any way, shape or form. And I suppose this is a difficult question, but in terms of hours dedicated, and I know this is quite difficult, but on average, how many hours a week do you think it takes to dedicate to being remotely successful at this sort of competition?
Yeah. You know, I think, and I have more memories of my Germany season when I went in Germany. You know, I remember that the source of information, it's online sites. You go to, you know, you have to find good and reliable side. No, I think at my peak, you know, almost, you know, 2 and 2 hours, I used to go online to check information about, you know, about players, if that player was injured, if he was recovering, you know, the lineup's prediction. And I remember in my best years, you know, in England, at Friday night, you know, I was, you know, I used to start after dinner, and only at, you know, 1 a.m. I used to go to bed, you know, after, you know, taking the decisions, knowing very well which players would start and not, you know. It was, you know, it was really, I used to spend a lot of time. And of course, you have to see the games, you know. I remember in my first years of marriage, you know, I have to buy furniture and things for the house, but I was always, you know, trying to find time to see the game in the weekend, to see the games, and manage, you know, everything quite well, because if you don't see the games, you know, sometimes you it's better for you to, you know, you'll do the best decisions the more information you have, you know. And in you're saying about preseason. Preseason is tough, but you know, friendly games. I remember seeing Wigan against a second division team. You know, a friendly game. But if you get the most information about who's starting for Wigan, who's in good shape in the preseason, it could be a differential in the beginning. And at my best years, I used to start very well. You know. I used to. I have, you know, some England friends now that they say they never saw any guy prepare so well the teams in the beginning of the season. You know, that's why I wrote in the book that one of the keys to success is to do a very good preseason. But you know, I can't answer you concretely about which how many hours I used to spend, but. I was at least seven hours before the weekend, you know, to prepare well, maybe, and then to see the games, as many games as you can in the weekend.
See, I just read the ticker tape on a Saturday morning on Sky Sports News as to who's out and who's in. Gary, dedication-wise, where do you fall in your season-long battles with your son?
It's interesting to hear Rui talk. You're there about, you know, getting married, and you know, yourself and Stevie, we know we often have conversations about how understanding our wives are, that, you know, we tend to, you know, divide times to podcast two or three times a week and whatever. But you know, Rui's missus must be the most understanding woman in the world, because if I want to get 7 hours after dinner on a Friday evening, I think the Monday morning I'll be in the divorce courts. But I guess you know. There's a difference between you know, doing these sort of things on a serious basis like Rui did, and you know, this sort of haphazard way that, you know, we do it for a laugh. And you know, Rui sort of graduated, I guess, from the latter to the former, and you know, the success he had after that, you know, it just shows, if you put the dedication in there and you've got the knowledge and the application, that, you know, you can get great success. And perhaps it's worth, you know, really mentioning that the competitions that he won, because the listeners won't know that unless or until they read the book.
Yeah, I mean, we'll come to, you know, especially the sort of the, you know, the big break in the English game and then repeating the feat again in Germany. But, you know, Stephen, like you say, I mean, you are a keen student of the game, you know, and you talk about data and patterns and that sort of thing, but is there a part of you that just plays the game on gut instinct?
Yeah, I'd probably say there is, yeah. It is just a complete and utter gut instinct. There's no tactics to it whatsoever, as far as I was. It was, I'd go with teams. I'd just go, yeah, certainly kind of like defenders and goalkeepers and stuff like that. I'd think, yeah, just go scattergun and pick teams I think would be hard pushed to concede goals. But I've never had that. Enough of a kind of like patience to be able to go back to it week after week and think he's injured, he's suspended, and I need to opt him out and that one in. So as a game, it's too busy for my mind. I'd be distracted by a passing dog or something like that, maybe, and I'd be gone. So by mid-September, it'd be all over.
Oh, that's right. I was just worried it was me, to be honest. So, you know, I mean, Rui, you know, we need to come to sort of the, you know, the main part of this part of your story, and that's your sort of two victories over two separate seasons in two different countries, in two different leagues. So if you can just sort of talk us through your victory in England, first of all.
Yeah. No, it was in England. It was in the season of 2009-2010. It was a season that Chelsea of Carlo Ancelotti dominated the league. It was a big season for Lampard, for Didier Drogba, John Terry, of course. But knowing the words that Gary said about my wife, you know, my wife was extremely, you know, she had. She believed in me, you know. She believed that if I would spend time, you know, studying and watching the games, she would support me, you know, the much that she could. I'm a very, you know, honest person, and I used to speak everything. But after I became a father, in also in 2013, I think my wife. For example, if now I would say, will you support me now if I would, you know, invest my time, you know, in fantasy football as I used to do? She wouldn't support me as much in that time. No, probably nowadays we have a son and it's different. Probably now I wouldn't have the focus that I had in that time, you know. And these are factors that are really important, you know. You have to have everything. I remember at times I was really obsessed, you know. That was like I had my work, my 9 to 6. In England, you used to say 9 to 5, but my 9 to 6 work in my finance job. But after that, my fantasy football was number one for me. But my wife was always supportive. But speaking about that season, I had a big disappointment in the previous season where I was leading I'm speaking about You the Manager, the Daily Mirror game. That was my number one, and I think basically it was the one that I played. I grabbed the opportunity to have a big lead in the previous season, but I lost it in the end. I know that all of you are probably, you know, like encyclopedias of these names and that I will tell. And it was Nicolas Anelka big season. And in the end, I did a wrong substitution. I think I took out Anelka for Fernando Torres, and then Fernando Torres got an injury, and I only have two subs left. I spend it, and another player from Everton, Phil Jagielka, got a serious injury on that weekend. So I was with 10 players and with no more subs, and I think it was like 4 or 5 weekends to go, and I lost it. And I had a period or a certain day that I was like 25 players, 25 points above second place. So I lost that, but I told to myself, the next season I have to win, you know. I have to come to overcome this. And on that season, I was much more careful about the substitutions management. And I remember that with 2 weeks to go, I was leading and I still had one sub left. And I remember that this is, you know, developed in a book, but it was Liverpool versus Chelsea. And I remember changing. A Liverpool defender, Daniel Agger. I don't know if you want me to say the names of the players.
Oh, yeah, they're crucial to the story. So yeah, absolutely.
Daniel Agger, which was a Danish defender from Liverpool, and I changed him for John Terry because Liverpool was hosting Chelsea, and okay, usually it's a balanced match. But to defend my position, as I was leading at the time, I understood that my opponents had more Chelsea defenders. Ivanovic was extremely popular, Ashley Cole, And I had the, you know, the knowledge and the calm to do this kind of substitution before a Liverpool-Chelsea, where Liverpool was playing at home, but I changed a defender of Liverpool for one of Chelsea just to defend my position, you know. And I had the substitution saved for that. And in the end, Chelsea won 2-0 at Anfield. But I was okay because I had the clean sheet. I had Terry, I had Ivanovic, and I didn't lose. I lost, you know, a few points, but I could go to the last week with a considerable points, you know, advance. I remember in the last week, Chelsea was, you know, parting the, you know, I think they trashed Wigan like 8-0, 8-1, I don't remember. I think it was 8-0. And it was just left the final, the FA Cup, which in Daily Mirror game, it would count. It was Chelsea-Portsmouth at the time, but, you know, I had like 4 or 5 players from Chelsea. And the only a big surprise, you know, like... I remember Ashley Cole was one of the players that I didn't have, and if Ashley Cole grabbed like a brace or something like that, I would lose. But I decided to don't see that Chelsea Portsmouth final, to don't become like too nervous, too anxious. And I remember the magic moment when I see after the game ended, I went to the web and see Chelsea won, and Drogba was the scorer, and I thought I won, you know. It was a magical moment. But after that win in England, I played the game in the next season. I had a decent performance in the season after. But then the English newspapers started to become more strict and limiting the players only to residents in the UK. So my chance was to start to play in the Germany league, and 2 years after my win in England, I played only in German. In Germany, you know, I had some experience of the game, as I played with like one or two or three teams, just to gain some experience in the seasons that I was playing in England. But on that summer of 2012, I decided I would just focus on Germany. I can't play in England. The only game I think I could play in England was Daily Star, which is a game that I didn't have, you know, much experience in. It was, you know, the I think the prize money was also a bit low. You know, I opted for not playing that game, and just focus on Germany. And, you know, I think it was incredible how I could win at my first focused season in Germany. It was completely. You know, I'm not the kind of person to say, you know, I'm the best and things like that. But it was really amazing how I could, you know, I don't speak German. I had to work and study also a bit of the language in that summer to prepare to the game and to see their sites. And I also bought some magazines. And I did a good pre-season studying, you know, all the Leverkusen, Freiburg, you know, Mainz, you know, all those teams. And I started, you know, a bit not strong in Germany, but you know, week after week I was climbing in the table, and I was the I don't know if I'm you know, this intervention is taking too long, if you want to ask the other
people. It's fine,
but in Germany, you know, I won the competition that they have. It was the winter champion, because they do a break of almost 1 month in December. I won the winter champion. The prize was a car, and at the time I was already, you know, leading and have a substantial lead. And for the second part of the season, I had a position, just to a strategy, just to defend and to build a team. You know, to be like consistent, because you know, Dortmund and Bayern Munich,
even at the time they were already the two main forces. But you can only have three players from each team in Germany, and you can only do substitutions in that middle of the season break. So you have to build a season for the second, build a team for the second part of the season. The good thing is that you can build a squad of 18 players, and in each week, and you have to choose the 11 players that would the points would count. So it was a very good game, and by chance the game was developed by an English company. You know, so I was playing in Germany, but the know-how and the organization was from an English company, and I think the game was very well structured. I tried to give some, you know, these details in the book. But in the summer of in May of 2013, I won Germany, and the prize was even better than in England. It was around 100,000 euros. And after winning England in 2010 and Germany in 2013, I thought maybe I can have a chance of having a real, you know, a real role in a football club. So on that summer, I decided let's build a CV, let's build a LinkedIn profile, and start to, you know, to email my story to the responsible persons of clubs in Portugal. It was more easy to me, but I also remember, you know, sending messages to some England clubs and in the USA clubs also.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there because I want to move into the second half of this story, but I just need to take stock a minute of the first half. Gary. There you go. Now, how inadequate do you feel in your fantasy football? Because you really need to go learn another language first, and then go and win it in a continental league that you didn't have much experience in the first place.
Well, I don't need room to make me feel inadequate at fantasy football. My son's doing that team at the moment, so that's well covered. But you know, I guess it just shows that the things you can achieve if you have the right application, dedication, and not a little bit of talent for these things as well. And it's as we move into the sort of second half of the book, it's interesting to see how that ability, that talent, that skill, that dedication translated so well into really sort of second career, shall we say, becoming a professional scout.
I mean, Stephen, it's funny, isn't it? I mean, especially it's quite a bizarre coincidence that obviously, you know, the season that Rui talked about there in England, and he sort of talked about the Liverpool side, the Chelsea side, and the Liverpool game at Anfield against Chelsea being pivotal, and obviously, you know, you and Gary being Liverpool and Chelsea fans respectively, but it sort of brings home, doesn't it, how some people watch the game as a data-driven, and again, I'm sure we'll touch on this when Rui talks to us about his, you know, sort of his second career, but some people can watch the game as a data-driven entity and, you know, and sort of look at it from a almost an unemotive perspective based on accumulating points, and then there's others who live and breathe every moment and will have no concept of the impact of swapping out Daniel Agger for John Terry and so on when you sort of walk into Anfield.
Yeah, it's that analytical mind, isn't it? That's what it comes down to. So many people watch football in so many different ways. You know, I'm a watcher of football, and you know, I see patterns on the pitch, but I don't see the personnel as such. So that analytical side of it, of watching kind of like, you know, connections of players, or it might be certain players not working with others, and the way that they operate with certain teammates against others. I see what's on the pitch at any one given time, and you know, I can pick out certain patterns of play and how, you know, a team as a collective will function, but without really thinking too much about what players are on, you know, and the difference that they make. So, you know, for me, it's yeah, I will watch football in a completely different way to Rui, probably will. But, you know, there must be a million and one different ways to watch football. And yeah, it's I'm a great... I can always remember we had a podcast with... It was Drew Broughton, that podcast with Drew Broughton, and I always remember the concept of Steve Corker being a Liverpool player for a short period of time. He was on loan for the need for a central defender. And I can remember saying how I could see the presence of a player. I could see his presence as a player, as an individual on the pitch, and just his presence. And Drew being quite surprised by the fact that I could say that, and he agreed with what I said, but he was surprised that as someone who never played the game, I could spot this presence of a player. But that's just the way that I particularly watch the game, or I can recognise certain qualities within a player, having watched football for so long. And everyone is completely different in the way that they can, you know, watch an individual footballer, or watch a collective of a team, or watch the imprint of a football match. And I find that utterly fascinating in how, you know, three different people can watch the same game and see three completely different things. It's a way that, you know, someone can turn around and say that they don't get a player, a certain player. You know, it's like Martin Peters was one of those, and you know, people will turn around and say, well, I just don't get what he did. But for me, I can, you know, in a retrospective way, and watching footage of him and you know, have it kind of analysed and studied him. You know, I get exactly what he was about, you know, but that is just part of the fascination in how, you know, from individual to individual, how they will sit and watch a football match and what they see when they do.
It is. It's the beauty of the game, isn't it? Every game is seen ever so slightly different through however many thousands, millions of eyes. If it's, you know, if it's on TV across the globe, everybody will see it. We'll see it slightly different. Okay, so Rui, your story in itself, you know, the book in terms of, even if it was just about, you know, sort of the tales of fantasy football, the dedication it took, the understanding wife that it also took. But then to go and repeat in another country is worthy itself. But then, like you said, you alluded to right at the end, you then decided to see whether this skill, this talent, this, you know, this eye for detail that Stephen just mentioned there, this eye for detail that you'd acquired, could that then translate itself into the professional game? And, you know, you sort of mentioned sending out CVs and sort of inquiries, if you like. How confident were you in your abilities to be able to make an impression within the professional game?
Yeah, that's a good question. In terms of my confidence, you know, in that summer of 2013, probably I was very confident that, you know, I had something special, you know, in terms of analytics, in terms of organization, and in terms of seeing things in the game or in the players that other people wouldn't see, you know. But coming back to my win in 2010, for example, Gareth Bale at the time was a player that he was at Tottenham, but he was not playing. But Harry Redknapp started to, you know, in the second half of the season, starting to playing him a bit more. And I remember seeing a game of Tottenham against Blackburn, and Gareth Bale didn't score on that game, but he was doing the left wing. And I thought, this guy Gareth Bale, this is a player that he can explode, you know. This is a guy that I want him on my fantasy football team. And I remember one night, in the middle of the night, you know, and thinking, I will sell Arbeloa, as you have Liverpool fans, you remember Arbeloa. And I said, I will sell Arbeloa and buy Gareth Bale. Gareth Bale was listed as a defender at the time, because the original position of him was left back, as you should remember. And I thought, I feel this guy has something special, you know, Gareth Bale. This guy can be huge. And I think he was also a key player in my team. It was like a feeling that I have based on observation and based on the potential of the player. But I think I'm in terms of football, I'm a person that I have a good, you know, self-esteem, you know, because I think in football I absorbed, you know, lots of knowledge. I had a look at your website, these Football Times. Those stories, you know, I love to see that, to have that knowledge, you know, stories that you write there. And from my early years, you know, I always, you know, try to absorb everything about football. I have a good memory. And going to the real football world. No, in my opinion, I would be an asset to every club, you know. No, in my first approaches to the, I think I write that in the book. But some of the clubs that answered me would ask me, how do you feel? Why do you feel you are an asset to? How do you feel you had value to our club? And, you know, I had to answer, you know, I had the answer in my mind. And I believe that some friends called me that I was a bit deluded. I don't know if it's the right word in England, but you are a bit deluded, you know. You're never going to make it, you know. This you are good in fantasy football. It's like I remember going to an interview in a Portuguese club, and the guy was saying, you could be like the guy that can do like 1,000 touches in the ball, you know, that kind of guy that are like have ability. But then as a player you could be very technical, but then you are nothing, you know. But I was, you know, listening to that. I said no. But as a scout or as a coach, at the time I couldn't play. You know, I was already in 33, I think. But I think I can add value. I have good skills in terms of my mind and the understanding of the game, and I'm a person that likes to win. I'm competitive, and only that skill, that aspect of wanting to win, of being competitive, I think that is also something that I think is positive to a club, you know. And you know, it my first, now speaking a bit of my early stages in my career. I had an invitation to work for Estoril Praia, which is a club that probably most of you don't know, but it was the club where Marco Silva, the former Everton coach and the Watford coach, he started his career at that club. Marco Silva. At the time, he grabbed the qualification for the Europa League with Estoril, which was in my first year. On my second year, he left for Sporting. He had the opportunity to coach Sporting. But Estoril offered me the opportunity to work for them without receiving any money. And I had to support the fuel and other expenses. They would just give me the invitations to the games. I was very happy to start with Estoril because I had to prove my value. I had to do a report about every game that I was covering. I used to cover like one or two games per weekend. Mostly was like second or third tiers here in Portugal. And I did a very good first season. My chief scout was very happy with my work, and he told me, your reports are good, your analyses are very good. And we want you to continue in the second season, and we are able to pay you money. Then, you know, after the season ended, the club bought two players from second division that I have given good, you know, good opinions about it. One, it's a player that is currently, you know, having a very good career in European football. He played for Ghent in Belgium. After Sturil sold him with a good profit, and he's now at PAOK, which are the currently Greek champions. It's a player called Anderson Esiti, and he was a success at Sturil. And the other player that they also bought was a success, but then he was sold to a Turkish club, and he was not good at Turkey. But you know, I impressed in my first season and in my second season. After some twists in, you know, in the before the season started, but I started to the season earning some money watching football. And it was not, you know, not fantasy football. It was real in the real football industry. And I was very proud. I remember I starting just, you know, earning 200 euros per month. This was a part-time job, but I was very proud to earn money from, you know, from seeing football and being a scout. And that's the beginning of my career. My first two seasons at Sturil were very, very interesting, very demanding, but it was very good.
Like I said, the story is absolutely fascinating, you know, and it obviously it's covered in, you know, immense detail in the book. But Gary, yeah. I'll come to you first. I suppose, you know, Rui's mentioned there, you know, if we go back to the beginning, it's that almost to make it in professional football now, you need to have that belief that, you know, you can't be a shrinking violet, if you like. You know, you have to have that belief that you can add value to the game. The way the game is played now, the way the game is run, anybody who is taken on by a football club has to bring something that they don't already have.
Yeah, absolutely. There's two elements there to that. Firstly, we had Marco Calvin on the podcast last year, I think it was, and talked about his book. He wrote another book called The Nowhere Man, which is about football scouts. And
it's interesting book. Yeah.
You read it? Oh, great.
I don't have the book, but I read what it was about, and I see a bit in the web. It's a very interesting book.
Yeah. The pages of scouts in those days were sort of very different to people such as yourself, who were sort of more technically minded, and Alice. These would be guys who, you know, you got pictures of them standing on the corner of on the sidelines of a lower league or non-league game with the collars turned up against the rain and a woodbine hanging out of their mouth. You know, it's just the image of what it was in those days, and, you know, obviously what you talked about is entirely different. But the second part is that, you know, you mentioned about, Steve, you mentioned about the self-belief, and I guess, you know, for anybody, A, to get convince a club to even talk to them about, you know, the an ability to identify talent in lower league clubs is a massive step. And then to have that self, that utter conviction that you are going to be right, to prepare to take on that work free of fee for 12 months just to prove yourself is, you know, is a massive undertaking. And, you know, more power to Rui for sort of doing it and achieving it and being successful at it.
It's funny that, because that was exactly my next point that I was going to come to Stephen with there. And again, you know, I suppose, you know, Gary's talked there about the, you know, the dedication stuff, but Stephen, I guess, you know, the work that has to be done once you're in a club, you know, like, and as Rui mentioned there, you know, it's 12 months unpaid, as Gary said as well, it's 12 months unpaid just to be able to prove that you can offer something. You know, there are no, not say quick fixes, but you've really got to earn your reputation, you know, show that you can bring things just to even get a wage, never mind make a living within the game.
Yeah,
Yeah, I think we probably appreciate that as people who write about football, is that, you know, there's so many people out there who, you know, want the content without paying for it, you know, but then, you know, you build a reputation, and then you get to a point where, you know, you can be more choosy. You know, it's exactly the same thing. I mean, it's a shock and awe thing to write something and paid for. But within that, I mean, I've classed it really there, is that, you know, is the part of him at all that not views himself as a as it being an accidental career. You know, it was a an unorthodox route into the career that he's got, this branch of his career that he's got. You know, but does that bring with it, you know, a kind of great appreciation of where he is now?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, is it, you know, like Stephen's just said there, Rui, you know, does it, because your route is so unorthodox, do you think you probably appreciate and value the role and the position that you now have, maybe more than others, per se?
We have, you know, when I look back and I remember that first season of Estoril, In that period of my life, and I was, you know, season starts, as you know, in August, September, August, and I became father in December. And I remember, you know, people, you know, saying, you will not, you know, have, you will not, how do you say, all to everything. You will not win every race, you know. You will not be able to be father, to be a finance, have a finance career, and also to work as a scout in Estoril. I remember some colleagues of my company saying that. And, you know, of course, and I'm proud of that first year. I'm proud of surviving that and to having results. And I can tell you stories that probably that book Nowhere Man also speak about it, but I could sometimes walk, like, drive, you know, 200 miles, and the player that I wanted to see get injury in the warm-up, for example. It happened once. My chief scout say, go there, see that player. When I see the team sheets, he was not there, you know. This kind of situation, you know, and you are not receiving any money. But you know, I was determined to show my value, and also because of, you know, Estoril was, you know, okay, it was hard, but Estoril was a club that I felt a bit lucky, because it was a club in a good period of their history, two Europa League qualifications. I thought this club would give me, you know, some CV, you know. I would, and as everything in your life, you have to show results. You have to build a reputation. And Estoril was, you know, despite being tough, I felt a bit, you know, lucky to have the opportunity at Estoril. I can tell you, and it's written in the book, that in that season I had also an interview at FC Porto, and at Benfica. And Benfica is my how do you say, my heart club, you know. It's the club that I support. I support since I was a child. You know, but Estoril was really special, and I was not ready to work for Porto or Benfica at the time. Despite, you know, I'm saying, okay, I was confident in my work, but, you know, things, I think, must be built, you know, gradually. And I was rejected by Benfica at the time. The interview was not good. The person in the that did me the interview, you know, said maybe you are a bit, you know, overrated, because, you know, just if you win just fantasy football, doesn't, you are probably not good enough for this. But you know, it's steps of your life or your career. Everybody here in this call probably had some rejections and some tough paths in the professional career, and that first season was really, you know, hard. In I struggled a bit, but it was the first step to, you know, I was not imagining that after two seasons at Estoril, I would be working for a team in America from the Major League Soccer. That was you know, also a huge step in my career to work to a team from, you know, out from outside Portugal. You know, also was good for me. I don't know if you want.
Yeah,
to,
I was just about to say it's my
yeah, experience there.
I mean, it's a big you know, we've covered Fantasy League in England, we've covered Fantasy League in Germany. You're employed in Portugal, which, you know, is your homeland. But then all of a sudden, this career that you're building for yourself, as you mentioned, then takes you across a continent to North America.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I think I wrote that in the book, but I don't know if I gave deep detail. But it was there was a fantasy football forum in England that I used to, you know, to write there. And I remember one guy when once wrote, try something in America, because in America the fantasy football, they have other sports. They have the hockey, they have the NBA. They have lots of fantasy competitions in lots of sports. I know that in England you have also cricket and probably other tennis, or I don't know. But they give lots of value to people that are successful in fantasy games, and they like winners. And I read that those words in that forum, that, you know, it was a sort of advice of an England person that was writing there. And I also tried to approach American clubs with my story. And a person from that club, Sporting Kansas City, started to change messages with me. And even that I was working with Estoril, we kept contact along my two seasons at Estoril. And when I decided to try change club in 2015, that club Sporting Kansas City offered me the opportunity. I give detail of that story in the book, but they hired a chief scout called Jorge Alvial that worked for Chelsea. I don't know if you know this name. Jorge Alvial, but it's a very, very well-known scout, and later he worked for Man United. And I had an interview with him in Madrid, because he was visiting Europe. I went to Madrid, and he said, okay, I will recommend you to Sporting Kansas City. I had a good relation with the assistant coach of Sporting Kansas City, which was the person that I was keeping in touch. And I had also a visit to the city and to see a game when I was working for Estoril. And it was a natural step in my career because, you know, they also believed in me. They also saw that I could probably have something special. It was funny that, you know, later they told me that when they saw my message via LinkedIn, they saw, I must see that the assistant coach of Kansas City is called Kerry Zavagnin. He said, no, I must see this guy. You know, probably could have something special. And Portugal and Spain are leagues that we cover and we like a lot to bring talent to America. So it was a good start. I worked for Sporting Kansas City for 3.5 years. They signed four players based on my work. One was by chance a former player of Estoril, and he's still there at Kansas now. It's called Gerso Fernandes. He's a quick winger. And also they signed Diego Rubio, which was a player that, you know, I used to recommend to Estoril, and I used to cover for Estoril, as he was a player from Sporting B. Because here in Portugal we have the B teams. I know in England you have like reserve leagues that you play the younger players. But we in Portugal the big teams have B teams. And Diego Rubio was a player from Sporting B. And it was a player that I'm very proud to have recommend it to Sporting Kansas City, because in the season of 2018 he was, you know, a key player and one of the best scorers in terms of minutes per goal in the league, you know, just below Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Martinez, which was a player from Venezuela. And I was very proud of my work in Sporting Kansas City. We won two cups, the equivalent of the FA Cup in 2015 and 2017. And you know, it was a solid step in my career. And I was feeling that I was really consolidating my career and becoming, you know, a scout that could, you know, could build a reputation and could, you know, could have, you know, can show his value and influence the results, you know, help, you know, my ultimate goal is to help a team to win competitions, to win trophies, and I was making it, you know, at Sporting Kansas City.
Like I said, I mean, Gary, isn't it? I mean, you know, we've read the book, and obviously, we have Rui here now, and the and the story, Gary, just gets more and more almost fantastical as we go along. Now Rui's taking us to another continent.
Yeah. You know, as I said earlier, you know, if we didn't know this was true, people say, "Yeah, come on, this doesn't happen," but. You know, it just shows the, you know, Rui's ability to spot talent and dedication to his art that, you know, he can not only succeed in his own country, but also, you know, amazing success in the MLS as well. You're talking about another major league in a different continent, let alone a different country. And obviously had the team prospered and not least due to some of the players that Rui recommended for them and that they took on board because of you know, Rui's promotion of their talents. And obviously then, you know, I'm sure we'll touch on this in a moment, after he finished the connection with Kansas City, he then became involved with a club in Poland, Legia Warsaw. You know, the story just goes on. It's an amazing story.
I mean, Stephen, again, you know, Gary just mentioned there, you know, the MLS, it's an up and coming league, but I suppose it must be something to do with like we said, the mindset, the attention to detail, to understand the MLS game, understand maybe Portuguese, Spanish players, and be aware of what, you know, who Sporting Kansas were looking for, but which players would make the transition, because, you know, again, it's not just about the player's ability. You've got to understand, as Ruiz mentioned, you've got to understand which players are going to fit within, you know, the move across to another continent, who will thrive, who will make it into their first team as well. It's the attention to detail and thought process is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's, you know, massive amount of variables there. It's, you know, even at the highest level, we only have to look at, say, someone like an Andrei Shevchenko, who struggled to translate himself into Premier League football. You know, I sat and watched Fernando Morientes struggle at Liverpool, you know, such a wonderful player. So, you know, a player could have every single, tick every single box, have every single, you know, aesthetic aspect to be able to say, yeah, that player really should thrive in this league. Only for them to not, you know, and the reasons for that can be so myriad. You know, it can be something as simple as, you know, day-to-day life isn't suitable, you know, the climate's not right, the food doesn't appeal, or, you know, living next to people that they don't get on with. You know, these, at the end of the day, are human beings. We've spoke about this on podcasts before, is that, yes, they're football players, football coaches, but at the end of the day, they're just a human being as well. You know, so the same rules of day-to-day well-being are exactly the same for them as they are for us. You know, we tip up for work or whatever. If there's someone we don't get on with, you know, that will have an effect on your day-to-day working life. You know, and it's the same for a player. So to be able to identify a player that should succeed in a certain league only for them not to, you know, has got to be a you know, it's a fine balancing act. You know, it's and like I say, we've seen it with the highest caliber players, and for Rui to be able to identify a player, you know, that's playing in, say, you know, the French second division, as he's watched before, and to identify a player from that kind of level, to be able to assess that they will thrive on a playing basis, but also on a personal basis.
Like I say, Rui, it's a fascinating story. You know, we're well over the hour already, but you know, as Gary alluded to there, you know, currently you're at Legia Warsaw, and I just, you know, I suppose before we finish, if you can just, I suppose, just talk us through a little bit then about where your career now currently sits in this arc that's gone from, I suppose, if, you know, if we start it at 2010, winning the Fantasy League in England, and you know, we go a decade down the line, and you know, whereabouts are you now?
Yeah. So, just to introduce my transition to why I started working with Legia Warsaw. Let me just tell you that, you know, in terms of scouting, you know, you do your best, you recommend the players, but sometimes the, you know, the coach or the technical directors or who else is in power, sometimes they do decisions that you don't understand, or you don't agree, or you don't see it's good for the club. And in the end of 2018, the Sporting Kansas City decided to trade that player, Diego Rubio, to another team in the league. And I was very upset with that, and I didn't agree at all with that decision. No, you could say, no, he's just a scout. He doesn't have, you know, nothing to do with that. But, you know, I have a brain. I have a football brain. And I thought, if they are doing this, the club will suffer in the future. This is a wrong decision, you know. You are Chelsea or Liverpool supporters. Sometimes you see some decisions when a player is sold, when a player is, you know, is not picked in the lineup enough. And I was very unhappy when they, you know, they traded Diego Rubio. I say trade because it was a trade for another player and for an amount of money. And that was disappointing because Diego Rubio was very important player in that season. The team clinched the semifinals of the Major League Soccer, which was a very good achievement. And I said, if this club is not good, you know, if Kubi is not good enough, I am also not good enough, and I'll try another thing. And I was right, because the 2019 season was terrible for Sporting Kansas City. They were almost the last team in the standings in the MLS, and the year before they were on the four best, you know, on the top four. So, you know, beside being a scout, you know, I thought I showed that I had some skills in terms of that kind of decision. So I, you know, I had a good relation with a former Legia Warsaw scout that was now the technical director, and I told him things are not going well in Sporting Kansas City. I want to try another club. Of course, I will not lie to you. I would love to be a scout in a top five European country in England, in France, in Germany, whatever. But Legia Warsaw is also a big club, and I accepted their offer. Because Legia Warsaw is a club with a big story. It's a club that achieved already semifinals in European competitions. It's a team that fights to win in the league every season, and has the goal to achieve Champions League. In fact, you know, I remember scouting when I was working for Sporting Kansas City. I remember seeing Legia Warsaw live in the Champions League. So I had the possibility now to work for a team that could reach Europa League or Champions League. And in my first season, the team, you know, I started work in March of last year for them. We didn't win the league, we were second, but we played the qualifications for the Europa League. The club signed one player in the summer based on my work. It's a Brazilian player called Luquinhas that I knew from Portugal League for many years, including from when he was playing in the third level here in Portugal. I recommend it. The player is really having a great season, great first season. He struggled a bit in the first months, but then in November, December, he started to play very well, and is now a reference in the team. From I can tell you that the supporters voted him as the best signing in the club for this season. We are currently leading the table. So before this virus crisis, we are close already. We had a good gap to the second place. So we are close to win the league. I hope that we can still be able to win. And looking at this, I'm very happy with my first year at Legia, because I must say in my career, you to have a good career, you also have to be lucky. You have to be lucky because you sometimes don't know the personality of the player. You can have a feeling, okay, this guy is a professional guy, this guy has discipline. But, I'm very happy to say that almost all of the players that I recommended, they are, ethical, people with values and work ethic. And Luquinhas, again, is showing that, I was lucky and I had the right feeling to recommend him. He's a young Brazilian boy, he's 23 years old, but, everybody in the club loves him. And he's doing very well, and we have the one disappointing I had in his first season was we played against Rangers in the last round before going to the group stage of the Europa League, and we lost against Rangers in injury time. We were it was zero after the first leg, 0-0 at Varso. We were also 0-0, but in injury time, Morelos scored, and we were out of the group stage of the Europa League. But anyway, for me, I think I believe that with my value, my work, I can help to make Legia coming back to the Champions League in the future. And I'm looking forward to my future and my career. As I told you in the beginning, it's my seventh season, and my career is being consolidated, season after season. And I'm happy with what I achieved so far. But I must say also, just to finish, that I was lucky also to find persons in the clubs that hired me in Estoril, in Kansas City, and now at Legia, that believed in me. Because if you don't find a person that believes in you, that believe you have talent, you will not proceed. You will not be. There's no miracles, But I was lucky in my career in lots of aspects. This is not just okay. You have to work. You have to give your best, but you need a bit of luck. There's no. That's the truth. Okay.
Brilliant. Well, Gary, there you go. That's the story right there from Rui. It's, like I say, we said at the beginning, it's an unbelievable, yet clearly a believable story because we have the guy who's lived it. But it's, just to sort of sum up there, Gary, and Rui talks a little bit about luck, but, and he's right, that element, that people who believe in you, but there's got to be something there, first of all, that people see in you rather than it just being luck, hasn't it?
Of course it has. And Rui's body's some fair play to him for that, but, as you said, there's a talent there, there's an ability, there's a belief, there's a dedication, and there's an inherent talent. This is a guy who sort of wanted to win the Fantasy League. In London did it. He wanted to win a Fantasy League in the Bundesliga and did it. He wanted to become a professional scout, and did it in Portugal, and did it in America, and he's now doing it successfully in Poland. I'm sure there's not even to look, but nobody on earth is that lucky. This guy's got talent.
Stephen, I suppose, you know, sort of the last word with you, Stephen, and, you know, I suppose Gary mentioned it right at the beginning, as a story, unless we had Rui here and if someone just tried to pass it off as a script of a film or whatever it is, you know, to put it into context, you might have somebody doing fantasy league, you know, if we start a new season in September, you've got a young guy doing a fantasy competition and in sort of 7 to 10 years' time, he's working as a scout for, you know, a Champions League side. It is almost too good to be true, isn't it?
But it's one of those. It's brilliantly too good to be true. But then along comes Rui to prove that it can be done. And I think he's just one of those great examples that, you know, if you believe in or you want to go out from there and do something. Then don't tell yourself out of it. Just go and try, because you never quite know what you are capable of until you actually have a go at it.
Rui, obviously, you know, we'll sort of finish with thank yous, but, you know, before that, you know, the book, you know, is The Unknown Champion, from fantasy football to the touchdown. Like I said at the beginning, you know, reading at the moment, but book sales are up. You know, a lot of people are turning to the written word for their entertainment at the moment. And like I say, this, you know, you are proof that this story is real. But, you know, I think we've sort of barely touched the surface of your story, as unfortunately time dictates. But, you know, for anybody who's looking for a fantastical, feel-good yet absolutely true story, you know, around football, then this book is definitely the one. But, you know, Rui, thank you ever so much for joining us.
I also thank you for, you know, also for your invitation. I think it was a very nice chat, and I think you were all, you know, football lovers, and it's great also to always to, you know, to chat with people like you, and I want to congratulate you also about your website. It's very, very interesting. Now I will see, you know, I will read lots of stories that you publish in the next days. I know it's fascinating for me as a football fan to, you know, to read that kind of, you know, different stories that you choose and pick for your website. A bit like mine, a bit unique story.
It is, and like you say, obviously, if I can only speak for myself, but I know, you know, I've worked with Gary and Stephen long enough. If it's about football, we're interested. That's the first thing. But then if it's something different and unique, and, you know, and all three of us, you know, we have our own interests within the game, but, you know, but all three of us love stories, especially stories with a human element, and, you know, and stories that people can relate to. It's been brilliant, absolutely brilliant having you on.
This is not to publish, but just to, you know, I found amazing that you have in your website story about Peiro Teu, which was a Portuguese player here in the 40s, in the 50s. And it was amazing that to find that, you know, that we know that story in Portugal, you know, but seeing that you know that and you went the way that you described that player, which is, you know, a player that only in Portugal he was known, you know. I think some years ago, I don't know if you did the research, but the president of Sporting tried to promote the legacy of that player, and I found that on your website. It is amazing.
That's one of mine, actually, really. I'm glad you enjoyed it. That's one of mine.
It was yours.
Yeah, it's one of mine.
Yeah, Peiro Teu. He was one of the greatest goal scorers of all time. Yeah,
but it's a brilliant story. I mean, when I found out about we were doing research on sort of goal scorers of latter years, sort of early years, and I came across the story, and it was just too good a story not to write.
Yeah. So it's brilliant, brilliant.
Glad you enjoyed it, mate.
Well, Gary, well done. Congratulations, Gary. Well done on unearthing a wonderful story from the yes year of Portuguese football. But also, thank you for joining us as per usual.
It's been an absolute joy. Great conversation, and, you know, as you say, it's well, I think we've all mentioned throughout the conversation that, you know, this is a story that you almost can't believe, but, you know, he's the living, breathing proof of it. So, you know, thanks, Rui, you know, and more power to your elbows as you go forward, mate.
Okay. And let's be in touch, and you have my contacts, and we can be in touch whenever you want.
I've just sent an invitation linked into you, mate.
Okay. Great.
Stephen, as always, thank you as well for contributing, joining in, and being here as evidence that this story does actually exist.
A joy as always, Stu, and really fantastic guest, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you for all, Stu.
Okay, so all that's left for me to say is to thank the listeners, and to ask, please join us again on the Lob Podcast with These Football Times. Thank you and goodbye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.